Kuf Nun Ches on page Kuf Mem Gimel. Page Kuf Mem Gimel, Halach Kuf Nun Ches, Yiras Hashem, Reishis Doas, Chochma Umusar Evilim Bozu. This is the Pasuk of Mishlei, beginning of Mishlei. Yiras Hashem is the beginning of Das. Chochma Umusar Evilim Bozu. The second half of the Pasuk says that wisdom and Musar, discipline, hard to translate the word Musar. Very, very hard word to translate. Everyone likes to learn Musar, and they think they know Musar, but try to translate the word in English, Musar. Okay, I think the translation I usually prefer is discipline. Musar is instruction, Torah is instruction. The translation for the word Torah, what does it mean Torah? Torah means instructions, right? We have a Torah, instruction, the instruction book. Musar means discipline. Chachma u'musar evilim bazu. Next. Despise. The word bazu means to despise. A foolish person, evilim. Evilim means a foolish person, evil.
So what does he despise?
He despises wisdom and he despises discipline. Shlomo HaMelech, I didn't make this up. Shlomo HaMelech says, the beginning of Das. What is Das? Not for now. Whatever Das is, how do we say it in Shemoneh Esrei? Ata chonin le'odem Das, melameh le'enosh bina, chonin le'mitcha dea bina v'haskel nusach ashkenaz. So you have over here, Das, chochma, bina. So what's the difference between those words so that there are so many interpretations? Let's leave for now. But right now we have over here something called Das. And the beginning of Das is Yiras Shemayim. And then it goes on to say, an Evil, he despises Evilim, Bazu, Chochma, Umusar. Period. V'sachas kisanu Das, v'yiras Hashem, loy v'charu. And there's another pasuk. He's quoting now another pasuk there in Mishlei, later on, v'sachas, it's all of this comes upon them. He's referring, I don't have in front of me the whole context of the pasuk, but there basically says, v'sachas kisanu Das, wicked people, because they hate knowledge, the Yiras Hashem loy vacharu, they have not chosen to go in the path of Yiras Shemayim, because of that, tachas. So the pasuk goes on to tell you what the consequences are. Oz tavin, now we have another pasuk, Oz tavin Yiras Hashem, v'das l'kim timsa, then you will understand Yiras Hashem, V'das Elokim Timsa, a righteous person, if he will follow in the ways of Hashem, he will understand Yiras Hashem and the Das of Hashem he will find. Another pasuk, Yiras Hashem, Sinosra. Those people who have fear of Hashem, they hate evil. V'go'on, V'derech Ra, arrogance, two words of arrogance. Geya v'gaon, v'derech ra, and the way of evil, upi sapuchos, flip-floppers, politicians. Okay, ufi, who won yesterday, by the way? Ufi, Baruch Hashem. Ufi sapuchos, sonesi, the pair of people who flip-flop. Okay, tapuchos means one day you say this, one day you say that. Whatever is popular, whatever you want, I'll say. You have no backbone. You have no standing. Sonesi Hashemets. Techilas Chachma, the beginning of Chachma, Yiras Hashem. V'das Kedoshim Bina, the das of holy people is Bina. Okay, so he just quoted for us over here in the Mopsukim. Yiras Hashem Taisif Yamim. Yiras Hashem brings the length of days. Ushnois Rishom Tiktsarna. The years of the wicked are shortened because they lack Yiras Hashem. Next pasuk. Hoylech b'yashroi, yirei Hashem. Those who walk in their yashroi, in their uprightness, are those who fear Hashem. Unilois derachav bozehu. And those who are, unilois means to wither. Bozehu, those unilois derachav bozehu. I'm not even sure what that means. But it means that they detest people that allow their ways to wither away. The people, righteous people, they are boizeh, they despise those. No, unulois derachav bozehu, I think the other way around. Unulois derachav, people who are wicked, And the way we are describing wicked people are people who are nilois derachav. Nilois means to make little of. People who mock derachav, the ways of Hashem, bezehu. Wait, nilois. I'm not sure what it means. I'm not sure. Okay, let's leave it. Let's go further. Despise. The word bezehu means to despise, and nilois means also to ridicule. To ridicule, okay, whatever it means, basically wicked people. They're not with the program. Next pasuk, b'yiras Hashem miftach ois lebanav yemachse. With yiras Hashem is a stronghold of might, and to his children there will be machse. There will be refuge. Hakadosh Baruch Hu, the reward for yiras Shemayim is Hashem will protect your children, your offspring, your future generations. Okay, basically, what he's doing, I'm just quoting all these psukim. Let's go very quickly. There's going to be a total of 18 psukim. Okay, he's running through 18 psukim. Let's just go further. Yiras Hashem mekor chayim. Yiras Hashem is the source of life. Losur mimayk shemavis, to in order to spare yourself from the stumbling blocks of death. Toiv ma'ad b'yiras Hashem. Better a little bit in this world with yiras Hashem. Me'oitzer rav u'milchum aboy, than having an abundance with confusion. Yiras Hashem musar. The Yiras Hashem brings Musar and Chochmah, brings discipline and wisdom. V'lifnei kavod anava, and before achieving honor comes humility. A person can never come to honor unless he has humility. Next, b'chesed yemes yuchub aravoyin, with kindness and truth, a person's sins are forgiven. U'v'yiras Hashem sur meira, with Yiras Hashem he will return away from evil. Next, Yiras Hashem l'chayim, Yiras Hashem brings life. V'soveya yolin bali pocket ra. And he will be satisfied. He will live in a state of satisfaction. He will not be visited with evil. Ekev anava yiras Hashem. In the result of anava, or the path of anava, brings yiras Hashem. Oysher v'chavod v'chayim, and also brings wealth, honor, and life. Al yikhani libcha b'chatoim, do not be jealous of those sinners. Ki im b'yiras Hashem kol hayoyim, but instead you should focus on yiras Hashem the entire day. Al tihi chacham b'necha, do not be wise in your eyes, Yiras Hashem, but instead you should fear Hashem with a sumi ra. Yiras Hashem bini, Shlomo says to David, fear, David says to Shlomo, Yiras Hashem bini, Shlomo says to his children, Yiras Hashem bini, vomelech, and be a good king. If you will fear Hashem, then your malchus will endure. V'yim, shaynim, altis, orav, do not mix yourself with people that are always changing their minds. Sheker hachein vevel ayoyfi isha yiras Hashem hi tisalol, the ultimate mile in a woman is yiras Shemayim. Okay, so we've gone through 18 pesukim. He has enumerated for us the Sefer HaChassidim without a computer. He has enumerated on the spot 18 pesukim which praise the mile of the mida of yiras Shemayim. What is the significance of the fact it appears that he has compiled a complete list? Okay, he has no computer, and he has compiled for us a complete list of pesukim which praise the milus of Yiras Shemayim. We haven't even touched the surface. Each pasuk itself is probably a whole world of exactly what it means. What's the significance of these 18 psukim? Hare Yud Ches Yiras. Keneged, where are you going to get a sermon Maimon Chazal like this? Keneged Yud Ches Minei Trefus. If you learn Masechta Chulin, you learn that there are 18 possible defects in an animal, and that automatically means defects in a person, because Moisar Oda Min HaBehema Oyin. There's no difference between man and animal. The Mishnah enumerates exactly 18 defects in the body, in the physical nature of a person, which if a person has one of these defects or an animal, it is impossible for that person to live. That person, according to one opinion of the Gemara, he will die within 12 months. Cannot live. 18 possible defects. Now we know the Rambam, by the way, has expanded the list of 18 to 70. The Rambam in the Mishnah Torah expands 18 to 70 defects, and all those defects are in fact part of Shulchan Aruch, listed in Shulchan Aruch. Today, there's a big discussion that today some of the things that are listed in the Mishnah and the Rambam, we find that if an animal has this defect, it can live a full life with no issue whatsoever. And we find today other defects which are not listed by the Gemara, the Mishnah, and not in the Rambam, that if an animal suffers from this condition or this defect, it will die very, very soon. So the big question over here is, how can Chazal give us these 18 expanded 70 when today it's not necessarily true? So this is a very, very big topic of discussion. We talked about it once upon a time. And the answer basically is, this is the way it was during Matan Torah. At the time of Matan, the famous Chazoinish, everyone learned, has adapted the Chazoinish. There's no other way to understand the Mitzvahs today. Nishtana Hateva, animals and human beings have adapted to their environment. And things that a person cannot possibly live with with ancient times, the body has created resilience, has created an immunity to these conditions, to these situations, and the body can exist, can live fine, even though there are these issues. On the other hand, the body has also weakened due to other reasons that we do not know, and things that in the past were not in halacha considered to be a treifa. Today, if there's a hole in a certain part of the body that, according to Shulchan Aruch, is not called a treifa, a doctor will tell you you don't have a chance. The person will not be around. The animal will not be around for a long period of time. It's for whatever reason, nishtane hateva. The earth, somehow, nature, man has developed on his own a resistance to certain conditions.
Corrective surgery
can change things. Exactly, can change things. Rybelski has an incredible chiddush. If not for Rybelski's chiddush, the world today, the whole kashrus industry would be upside down. It would be a whole different world. He says an incredible chiddush. He says that if a doctor, a veterinarian, they have to apply this to people as well. If they make a hole in a person, in an animal, for the purpose of refuah, that does not make the animal into a treifa. In other words, if you do a surgical procedure, it says in the Gemara, if there's a hole in the stomach of an animal, the animal is a treifa. Now, what does it mean an animal is a treifa? If you do a shechita, you can't eat the meat. You cannot drink its milk. If you have an animal, and the animal is on a farm, and they're milking the animal for its milk, and one day the cow says to the balabayas, I don't feel well. I don't feel well. The cow talks. I don't feel well. The cow says, I don't feel well. So the balabayas, what's wrong? My stomach is hurting me. Okay, let's go to the doctor. They make an appointment, and they take the cow to the doctor, and the doctor says, this cow has a stomach problem. We have to do surgery. We have to go and make an injection in its stomach to release some gas or whatever we need to do. And the doctor takes out his big needle, he injects it, and makes a whole, a nekev mefulosh, a through and through, from the outside, inside, straight. According to Shulchan Aruch, this animal is a treifa. It's mamash a treifa. Nothing to talk about. So Rybelski says, doesn't say the same way in Shulchan Aruch, Rybelski knows Kol Torah Kula, he says if you do a surgical procedure in order to heal the animal, and it works, the surgical procedure has proven to work, and the animal in fact lives for a very long time.
I think that's machlokes and goldenflow.
Everyone has to come on to this. You do a surgical procedure, and you do what it says in Shulchan Aruch, makes the animal into a treifa, but it's not done, it didn't happen by itself due to an illness. It was done to the animal as part of a surgical procedure to heal the animal. That is not what it means in Shulchan Aruch and in the Gemara and the Mishnah that the animal is a treif. So this animal, this cow that was complaining that it doesn't feel well, was taken to the veterinarian and was given a shot, was given an injection from the outside to the inside, through the stomach, through into a neck of mefulosh. You can when you come back from the doctor, it goes back to the farm and it produces milk. And you can drink that milk. That's a shocking chiddush. A lot of people are very in awe of this psak halacha, because according to what it says in Shulchan Aruch, the animal is a treifa, which means the milk is treif. The milk is not kosher milk. You're not allowed to drink that milk.
What did Rabbi Belsky say again? Then what?
Making a nekev mefulosh in the stomach of an animal, it does not, nekev, a hole, does not make the animal into a treifa.
There's a difference between a nekev and a surgery.
The difference of how, no difference, a nekev is a nekev, a hole is a hole. The difference is why the hole, how the hole get there. Belsky says, if the hole got there because of the animal was sick.
It's like bending holes in the ear.
Yeah.
When you take it out, it seals. And it closes. There's nothing wrong with it.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't.
He was the past, he posted before Rabbi Belsky.
But Kohen is born with a moon.
It doesn't just because it doesn't matter. It's even if it doesn't heal. Even if it doesn't heal.
But Kohen is born with a moon.
Yeah.
Not in those days, but today, if you surgically can repair the moon. The question is,
I don't know if there are really clear answers to these questions. See, the issues are the same things that apply to animals apply to human beings. Now, you'll ask, where is Nogei Halacha L'maisa? By Kohanim. But by Kohanim, it doesn't apply. There's no Avodah B'zman HaZeh. So it's not really relevant B'zman HaZeh.
Can it
dochen
with a
mo? Yeah, absolutely. Duchening, you can.
Have no hand?
No, a hand, you need a hand. Nesias Kapayim. That you need a hand, you need feet also. You have to stand.
My shul had Cohen had an accident, and he had surgery, and he went to Rav Robin and said he could do a dochening, but he had fingers cut, something like that.
Okay, there are certain rules. I don't know, but the one thing is for sure: the rules of dochening are not the same as doing avoda in the Beis Hamikdash. Doing a Cohen can dochen with a blemish. A mum is not an issue. There are certain things that he can't dochen. He can't stand. He cannot duchen. And if he doesn't have an arm, he cannot duchen. Or if he looks funny. He looks funny, people look, he's a distraction to the people. He's a distraction. But if he has a blemish, it's not an issue. So basically, there is really no practical application, bizman hazeh, regarding a kohen who has a blemish. Animals, there's practical application every single moment. Because if the animal has a mum, has a blemish, and it makes it into a trefa, the meat is, if you slaughter it, the meat may not be eaten. If it's a milk cow, you're not allowed to drink its milk. If it produces eggs, you're not allowed to eat its eggs. These are things that are very practical when it comes to animals regarding eating them. Whatever halacha applies to an animal will apply to a human being. But for human beings, we don't really have any applications today without the Beis Hamikdash that it's relevant. There's a question when it comes to a dayan, serve the lishkas hagozis, does he have to be, can he have a blemish? It's not so simple. If he has a blemish, if a dayan has a pacemaker, does that make him possible to be a dayan? If a kohen has a pacemaker, does that make him possible to do the avodah?
Okay,
so I read a lot of commentary on that story. The people don't understand the story. They said, why can a dayan have a pacemaker? What's the problem? Doesn't say anywhere he can't have a blemish. Kula yochrayasi mum ein bach. So Chazal dash in reference to the Sanhedrin. Kula yofer rayasi, that refers to the Sanhedrin, the Lishkas Hagozis. You're beautiful. All of the members of the Lishkas Hagozis are beautiful. Mum ein bach. And none of the members of the Sanhedrin have any blemishes. So if a kohen has a blemish, that means that you can't fulfill what it says in Shir HaShirim. It's Divrei Agada. Divrei Agada, it's not necessarily something which is halachically, halacha l'maisa. Yeah.
We have a list of blemishes.
70, yeah, 70 yeah. Blemishes.
So we cannot enter. Like a pacemaker was not listed there.
In a chnami, so I don't know. I don't know the depth behind that story. I don't know what it means. The famous story of Moshe Feinstein. He at the end was he did get a pacemaker because it was the doctor's orders. But he was upset that having a pacemaker would disqualify him to be in the Sanhedrin in the Lishkas Hagozis based upon the Medrash and Shir Hashirim. Kula yochrayasi, my beloved, you are completely beautiful. Umum ein bach. There is no blemish in you. And Chazal darshan this in reference to the Sanhedrin in the Lishkas Hagozis, that they are beautiful, and none of the members of the Sanhedrin have any blemishes. So if a person has a defect in their health, that automatically, that's called a blemish, and they no longer sit to serve in the Beis Hamikdash. Since that story has happened about 30, 40, 50 years ago, there have been a lot of people who have written on that story, and they just wondering that is that what Rav Moshe said? First, is it a real story? That's always the first question he asks today. Who says the story is even true? And number two, when Rav Moshe said it, in what context did he say it? Is there any halachic validity to that story? Is it really true? And many seem to say it's not necessarily halachically correct. It doesn't seem to be. Just because there's a medrash that says this, a medrash is not a halacha sefer. It's not a practical halacha. Okay, so we don't always paskin. Two things that today halacha has taken over, medrash has taken over. There are two things in this world today that for some reason, beyond my understanding, beyond many people's understanding, became halacha. Number one is techeles. Techeles that you see today sold in the market. The murex, trunculus, that's sold commonly in stores, and you see in Eretz Yisrael is being worn by a very, very significant number of religious Jews who wear techeles. That techeles can only be kosher if you only according to the midrashim. In the halachic gemaras, it doesn't work. Okay, there are numerous Amari Chazal, and they all contradict one another. We'll talk about it a little later on. And basically, that Tcheles is only kosher if you hold that the Agoda, Divrei Agoda, are Ikor, and the Gemara is in Shas, that are Divrei Halacha, are Tofel. Which is a shocking thing to say, because Divrei Agoda does not become Halacha. Reisman is the strongest defender of the Divrei Halacha, saying that this whole Tcheles that everyone is crazy about, this is a very big problem, it's all based upon Divrei Agoda, and the Divrei Halacha seem to say the opposite. And the other area of Agoda that has taken over the world is Satmar. Satmar is a shita on Eretz Yisrael, that Eretz Yisrael is a sin. The Medinas Yisrael has been conceived in sin, is all based on Divrei Agoda. Hishpati eschem benos Yerushalayim, into Eruv, into your Esohava, Adshe Techpots. The Sholoish Shavuos, Emesechta Ksubos. And the Sat Meshitas, they built a Gansa Torah, a whole Torah, is that Medinas Yisrael is, I don't even want to say what I should not be saying, but a dialogue of the Hakim of Remiza, I don't understand. I told you we had a whole share on this. It's all based upon Divrei Agoda. So how can that become a halachic principle? Right. If you want to say, like I always tell you, if you want to say yearly, there are problems. I get it. I really get it. You can persuade many people with that approach. But to build a yisoid upon a halacha, it's a halachic principle. It's agoda. Agoda has never been the Klal Yisrael a basis for Shulchan Aruch. So it's I'm just telling you, I'm noting, I'm not coming to Chasha Mechilik, Bedele Yisrael. Okay, Kedoshim Metoharim, it's not my place, Chasha Shalom. But we should be aware, at least, is that there are two things today in society that are built upon Divrei Agoda. Tcheles and an approach to Eretz Yisrael, which has, unfortunately, in my opinion, penetrated over the years into men, to the yeshiva world, has definitely penetrated. And it wasn't like that years ago, at least I don't think so. It's Divrei Agoda. There's Divrei Halacha, Divrei Agoda. Now going back over here, going back to the animals, there are 18 trefais. 18 trefais, which has been expanded by the Ram to 70, the Toilados. And this was a Metzias in the time of Matan Torah. And even though today you will look and you will see that it's not necessarily fatal for an animal or for a human being to have these defects, nevertheless, since this is the way it was at the time of Matan Torah, we preserve the Mesorah, and these are the halachic defects. Arbelsky has an incredible chidushim about these ideas, corrective surgery, and certainly how that would apply to people as well. Corrective surgery for all different types of matters, how it changes a person's status. Like a kohen has to look at saras. Let's say a kohen had cataract surgery. Let's say they replaced the corner of his eye. Okay, he got a transplant, and he has 20/20 vision. Today, if you want, by the way, and not in America, I think in America it's still illegal, but I think in Eretz Yisrael they can do it for you if you want. If a person has cataract surgery and you really want, they can give you a vision better than 20/20. The Ribbono Shel Olam only gave the most 20/20. But if you go to the doctors, what?
You can have better than
20/20. They can give you an Eretz Yisrael in America, they never do it. I think it's illegal. They'll lock up the doctor if he does it. If they do surgery, you're only allowed to give corrective surgery, laser surgery, and all these techniques. There's a certain thing they can do, and there's a limit what they're allowed to do. But theoretically, they can give you eyes like an eagle. You can see for miles. Like the bionic, remember the bionic man? They can do it today. It's not a joke. And you can, for enough money, it's not outrageous. And people anyway who are getting, they are anyway doing surgery, they have an option of how good you want to see. And the psychological effect of having your eyes see too good has not yet been known on what it can do to the mind. What is the effect of seeing too good have on a person's mind? Who knows? No one knows this. So it's playing around with a lot of things. Any event, we have here this very, very fascinating yisoid. There are 18 psukim in Tanakh. 18 psukim in Tanakh of Yirah Shemayim, and there are 18 trefos, and the Sefer HaChassidim has gone off on an incredible path to connect the dots, to connect the 18 Yirah Shemayim to 18 psukim. Yirchas Yirah Shemayim, Yirchas Yirah Shemayim, the trefos, Loimar, Afilu Noitlin Chayiv Shal Adam Al Yimra B'mish Shememis M'chayim. That even if it takes away your life, even if it takes away your life, you should not rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He explains, "She'im ta'abit chayecha bavurai hu yichaya oischa." If a person loses his life, if you lose your life bavurai, if a person gives up his life in honor of Hashem, don't worry, Hashem will give you back your life. V'im techaya oischa, and if you keep yourself alive in a situation where you mechuyev to give up your life, who yitul chayecha, he'll take away your life. The person is in a situation where he must give up his life, and he chooses, no, Hashem, I want to live. You think you're going to outsmart Hashem? You think you're going to live? You're supposed to give up your life in honor of Hashem. And you're making the decision, I'm not going to give up my life. I'm going to convert. I'm going to bow down to the cross. I'm going to convert. So then what's going to happen? You think you're going to live? Don't worry, Hashem will catch up with you. He will ultimately take away your life. And when He takes away the life, He'll never give it back. Now you have to understand something. This Sefer was written in the height of Shemat, 800 years ago. Okay, so 800 years ago was during the time, approximately, I don't know, what 800 years ago was what year?
30th century of the Christian.
So it was not during the First Crusade, it was a little bit later, but it was the entire period of time was, there were 10 Crusades.
It was early Inquisition.
Yeah. Early Inquisition.
Inquisition was still in effect.
It was in effect in those days. Inquisition was a horror. Inquisition was even worse. It was one of the worst.
But that was in Spain.
Okay, but it was all over. There were pogroms. He's writing during a time, the aftermath of the Crusades. The Crusades went on really for 300 years. There were 10 Crusades. The last seven were very schwach, weak. The first three were the big ones. Okay, the first one we all know about, the kinos of the Shoinim of 1096. And I think the second one was the one that's in the movies, the one Richard the Lionheart, right? That was either the second or the third. That was the second or the third.
Robin.
What?
Right.
Robin Hood. So that was which crusade? The second or the third? The third. The third crusade. Okay, so that was later on. You don't hear about that in Chazal. You don't find Chazal when we kinos and all of the things that we are familiar with are from the time of the First Crusade, 1096. Then there was a Second Crusade. And then there was a Third Crusade. The Third Crusade was filmed by Hollywood, and they have glorified and all these Meshugayim and all of these things. A lot of these movies are anyway all lies, but. That's the second. Then afterwards, people don't even know there were another seven crusades. But you don't hear about them because they didn't accomplish anything. And the numbers were very insignificant, but probably there was a lot of Jews probably suffered. And we don't even know the history. There was probably a lot of suffering that took place during those crusades as well. But that already was the time already when there was dispositions, debates between Jews and Christians. And when the Jews lost the debate, then they were expelled, expulsions from every single country, and then they began the time of the Inquisition. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid is writing this Sefer against the backdrop of where it was very, very common. Jews were tortured, and it was demanded of them that either they convert to Christianity or they are going to be killed. To die, Al Kiddush Hashem, was a very real, very common in life. It was something that you heard about all the time. And obviously, not every person was able to be omen in this Nisayan. And he's writing over here something to the people of his time. Don't be afraid to die. Don't be afraid to die. If you have to die, Al Kiddush Hashem, do not worry. Hashem will bring you back to life, whatever that means. And if you are a coward and you choose not to die, you choose to give in and allow yourself to die and not to live, what do you think? You think you're going to get away with this? Hashem will catch up with you one day and He will take your life. And when Hashem will take your life, He's not going to be giving it back. Now, as we always mention, Sefer Hasidim is not for the faint of heart. Sefer Hasidim was written today, it would be banned 100 times over. And this is another example of something which is not popular. Because when you read today's literature on the Crusades, and you read today's literature on the Holocaust, the common approach, rightfully so, is don't blame anyone. The people who are not able to give up their life are just as big heroes as the people that we glorify who did give up their life. If we were there, what would we do? The degree of torture and torment is just not to be believed. Someone mentioned to me recently is that he has a very big complaint, and I totally agree with him, not that my opinion counts, is that the Holocaust today, there was always a problem, that there was never a really orthodox, like learning tools or museums that focused on the Orthodox Jews' outlook of the Holocaust. Yad Vashem is very impressive. I was there in the U.S. It's amazing. But unfortunately, I'm not telling you any chidushim. Maybe I think now it's a little bit better. It's very, very secular. It was designed, at least originally, it's horrible, the degree of the secular approach to studying the Holocaust is just horrible. Okay, lately there's been a lot of complaints, and they've added a lot of exhibits and people, tour guides, things like that, people who are, I don't know what they're called exactly, people that give people tours of Yad Vashem, and they present a religious approach. Okay, the Holocaust Museum in Washington. All over. Unfortunately, the Orthodox Jews are a very, very small minority. In response to this, there have been people who have come along and have attempted to create a museum, a curriculum of the study of the Holocaust from the perspective of an Orthodox Jew. Right. And they've received very, very high praise, but no high praise goes without a little criticism. And what is the criticism? The criticism is that there's too much emphasis in the Orthodox approach, the curriculum. What would that be? Well, the approach is to look at the Yad Hashem. What?
It's all different ideas,
what?
Not one single approach.
There are many approaches, many in the Orthodox, but it's not just. It's not just a very secular approach, and the only thing to focus on is resistance in the Warsaw Ghetto, never again, and the State of Israel is the response. The State of Israel is the response to the Holocaust, and homeland. You know, you have to go. I'm not fluent in all of the nuances, but remember that. So there's been a response, and over the years there's been a lot of stuff. There's been books. A lot of the curriculum, there's been curriculum and books, and there's been museums that dwell upon an Orthodox perspective on the Holocaust. But there's been a problem. There's been criticism. What's the criticism? The criticism in that in these books and in these museums, they glorify people that in the concentration camps and in the very big nisyonot, who were moiser nefesh to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, who were moiser nefesh to bake matzahs, who were moiser nefesh to smuggle in a pair of tefillin. And these are very beautiful stories. They make you cry, and it's very beautiful and inspiring. But
yes.
What about the people who were not moiser nefesh to hear shofar?
Okay.
The Orthodox Jews, the vast majority of Orthodox religious Jews who did not smuggle in tefillin into the camps, they're just as big. Their heroism is just as big as the people who are moiser nefesh to blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah. And in fact, they will tell you, what right did you have to blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah? You're endangering everyone. Okay, you go, you bring in tefillin. What right do you have to it? Obviously, we're not questioning anyone, chas shalom. But it's not fair not to give credit to a person who suffered enormously, lost everything, and when he was when he suffered, he was completely irreligious, completely non-observant, and then he survived, and whatever happened, you know. And some of them those who went back to Yiddishkeit. Wow, they're just as big as a hero as the person who blew shofar. And even the people that did not necessarily return to Yadus, traditional Jews, they're happy that they're Jewish. And someone who unfortunately completely left, can you blame them? You can't blame them. That is something which also deserves a discussion, deserves the limelight from an Orthodox perspective. Don't just make a museum and focus on the fellow who blew shofar, the fellow who was smuggling tefillin.
And is maybe
the exceptional,
not
the heroic.
What?
And
you know what?
Maybe
it's not true.
Yeah,
what do you mean it's not true? What's not?
He blew shofar.
There are certain documented stories.
My father was in a concentration camp with a very famous rabbi, and they were in the same line for food for 5 years, and later I was reading during the war, he didn't eat only kosher food.
That's not true, right?
Yeah, so but that's what they put in.
Okay, there are a lot of lies. That's an old story. There are a lot of lies.
But I think that basically that I know of 3-4 museums that have the Orthodox side, but they do bring the from response that is not all the way to one. There's two responses, three responses. So where I saw what they did for making matzah, there's also another group from people who made a bracha on the bread, saying the Chai Bahem, we're making this bracha with kavana.
And what about the people who didn't make a bracha?
At all, okay.
No, that they don't. That's the criticism.
I don't think that they negate him in the film.
Right.
The
that's the latest.
The Yad Vashem,
yeah.
And many part of it because they don't know the copy of Yad Vashem. They deliberately leave out the from reaction. Now they're starting to put in, but they're deliberately...
Right, they deliberately leave out. They deliberately...
Way, which is the Zionist, whatever.
The Zionist way, and right. That's
such a museum here.
The
from museum in Brooklyn.
They close it down.
Which one? Close down?
Money.
The Kleiman
is closed down. I think it's closed down. Yeah. The one, the Aguda, on top of the Aguda...
Yeah.
No.
On top of the Aguda.
No. He's at the climate
view. Yeah, on top of the Aguda. They took the Aguda, big, beautiful shul. I don't understand what's going on over there. I don't know what's going on. I don't know. Something happened there also.
In this museum, they showed a letter that was written to by Rabbi Oshri.
Yeah.
Who was there, and it was by a boy who was not yet bar mitzvah. And he wrote him a letter. He said, you know, my whole family is wiped out. And you know, I'm soon going to be 13 years old. The boy wrote in the letter that he doesn't think he's going to reach it. He thinks he's going to be killed before his bar mitzvah. He wants to know if he should start putting on tefillin now. Yeah? And Rabbi Roshi said, yes, he should. and he said the boy was right. He was murdered before his bar mitzvah.
Unbelievable. But see, this is the problem.
That's documented.
You get a great example. You go to a museum, a religious Orthodox. So they're going to show you two people. They're going to show you two different sides. The people who went and they were moiser nefesh to bake matzos in the worst conditions in the Holocaust. Wow. I'm in awe of these people. And then they're going to present, and there were people who were not moiser nefesh because they felt it was sakonis nefesh. So instead they ate bread, and when they ate the bread, they said, Ribbono shel Olam, we're making a bracha because we can't have matzah, so this should be viewed as our matzah, the bread, the chametz. But the criticism lately, everything has a time, is, and what about all of the other people who didn't eat matzah, who didn't make the bracha, didn't make a bracha altogether? They said, I'm miserable. What happened? What happened? How could this happen? They didn't make a bracha altogether. What about them? They're not heroes. They didn't die as Jews. They didn't die. And what happened? Those people who survived, some of them, they went back to Yadus. They went back to Yadus. They're just as heroes as the one that didn't. And going back to Yadus doesn't mean you have to go back and become a Sadma Chassid. You go back, they became traditional Jews. Who's to judge?
Right.
So these are beautiful stories. These stories make us cry. But I appreciate the complaint. The complaint is you. Don't only focus on when you discuss the Holocaust from an Orthodox. The Orthodox response is responding to Yad Vashem is amazing. I mean the whole structure, the whole place here is just mind-boggling what they built over there. And I went on the tours. And I was horrified. I really was horrified when I went to Yad Vashem many years ago. I'm sure by now it's better. I remember when it first opened up. I was in Eretz Yisrael. Oh, you got to go to Yad Vashem. So I went. And it's amazing. I mean, just the whole complex is just not to be believed. And there's very little religion, if at all, almost nothing, when I was there. There's like no, you wouldn't even know there's something called an Orthodox Jew in this whole complex.
I'm a little lost in this whole conversation with the Jews. In general, my first question is, what are we trying to accomplish with the museums, with the history?
To remember what happened. To memorialize. There are, good question. What's the purpose of the Holocaust? Why do we have to remember the Holocaust?
Don't forget.
Well, number one is... Number one is to first of all we have a duty, we have an obligation to give kavod to people, to our ancestors. Okay, that's number one. Yizkar, like you say, Yizkar. You have an obligation. Part of Yadus is where do you come from? Where do I come from? Who is my father, my grandfather? We go back to Matan Torah. We have a duty to give honor, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. So we have certainly an honor that something only happened 75 years ago. We have an obligation to give kavod, honor, to people who gave up their lives on Kiddush Hashem 75 years ago. That's number one.
What does that have to do with the approach of secular religious or anything else? That's where I'm getting confused.
We're going to give honor. Hopefully,
what
happened again.
They weren't really heroes.
Their approach, a lot of the secular approach is, it's very sad what happened to them. And what happened is, the reason why it happened is because we don't have a state. There is no state. We don't have an IDF. We don't have an Israeli Defense Force to help us. And we have to learn the lesson that if you're going to be a wandering ghetto Jew, it's going to happen again. So the only solution... The way we have to remember that the non-Jews hate Jews, and we have to protect ourselves in the future. We have to learn from the lessons of history, and to learn that it should not happen again. And we have to understand the reason why it happened was because we were defenseless. It's not because we did anything wrong, Chas v'Shalom. That's not an issue. It's not because the Torah is the tzaddik, the raloi. It's not because there's anything to It's because we just didn't have weapons. We didn't have our own homeland. And therefore, the only solution is to move to Israel, become part of the state of Israel, and join the army, and be a nation like all the other nations. That's the message you get when you go, when you're secondary prayer. Yeah, among many other messages. There's no answer as to why it happened. That we know. There's no answer. However, you have to recognize it's a duty of a Jew that Hashem did this. This is an act of God. I think that's a very basic, elementary approach, orthodox approach. Why it happened, don't you dare go there. No one can dare say why it happened. But we have to accept, we have to accept that this was the Yad Hashem who did this. And it forced us to say, how could that be? How could Hashem do something so evil? First, we have to appreciate the magnitude. Going to, you know, you read about the, oh, Holocaust, what happened? I don't even know what happened. There was a guy, they ripped him to shreds. They still don't forgive him. Ari Yomazeh, he said publicly, they said there were 6 million Jews. Most of them don't even count because they weren't religious. So let's reduce the severity of the Holocaust down to less than half.
Who said that?
A rabbi said that.
It's true.
So they ripped him to shreds. Boy, I never saw someone get such bad PR when he said, how dare you say that? Dare you, a Jew is a Jew. He was, every Jew that was killed because they were Jew. So they weren't religious. So there was Haskalah, and there was this, there was that. The bottom line is, Hitler went out with a plan to destroy Klal Yisrael. It's not your business to play God and decide who's a good Jew, who's a bad Jew, a religious Jew. Don't go say, okay, the Holocaust, it wasn't, when we talk about the Holocaust, we're not going to say the number 6 million. Because more than half of those people don't count. They're Yisrael Mumorim. They don't count. So let's only focus on a select group. Let's focus on the tragedy that happened to them. I mean, well, you guys are off the wall. The guy's nuts for saying that. Total nuts. And so he apologized, made videos, but the stigma of what he said still, Ad Hayoyim Hazeh, the stigma of what he said was so jarring, so ugly, they never forgave him. Never forgave him. So, no one's here to play God and say why it happened. That's not our, but the point, the orthodox approach is, number one, we have to acknowledge this was the Yad Hashem. You go to the museum, I'm sorry, Hashem's not invited in there. He's not invited. What? Yeah, 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 you do. That's right. Going to the museum, there's no God. There's no God. This happened. It's man, that's the survival of the fittest. It's survival of the fittest. What do we expect? What do we expect? The survival of the fittest. And Hitler rose to power. He doesn't like Jews. So what do? We have to make sure it doesn't happen again. How are we going to do it again? We don't have to go pray to God. We don't have, what? That's Hester.
That's Hester Banim. God did it, Hester Banim.
Yeah. What else is there? No. What else? You have another approach? Wait, you have another approach?
I don't know what that, I know Hester Banim means.
So what I think you're saying is one is a reaction to the other. Yeah. One is the mirror image of the other.
At the mirror image.
Yeah, because you're saying one extols the focuses on the heroism of the secular, and the other focuses on the heroism of the religious. So they are mirror images, in fact. You're saying the middle is left out.
Why is focusing on the heroism of the irreligious any different than the heroism of the religious?
I'm just saying, because one was excluded, the former excluded the latter, so now the latter is a reaction.
Religious is all, it's very, very simple, the religious approach. It's very, very simple. It's just basically to acknowledge it's the Yad Hashem. And to say we have no idea why, but yet to bring him into the picture. That's all it is. That's the whole thing. In the secular museums, Hashem is not part of the picture. I'm sorry, it's a fact. I'm not making this up.
No, it's true.
To go, now the danger is, okay, I got it. Hashem is part of the picture. Oh, Hashem is part of the picture. So now tell me why. What did we do wrong? What did we do and what sins did we commit? That there's no answer for. And unfortunately, people have ruined it for us. There are people who have ruined it for us by telling us why. I mean, this is not a responsible thing, and according to anyone. And why, you want to have a reason why, keep it to yourself. Keep it, you know why? Keep it to yourself. Don't go publicly tell people why it happened. There is no reason why it happened. And this created a very big problem. All right, we're really out of time. We have to stop. We have to go very